searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Good morning, and welcome into this Tuesday edition of The Daily Perspective podcast. Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host here with you, hoping you're having a fantastic day. Thanks a lot for listening to this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Good to be back after being away for 3 days. Of course, those of you who've been paying attention understand I wasn't here yesterday because I was with a family member who had some surgery. All went well, by the way, and she is back home again and resting. I will not say she's resting comfortably because they did prescribe some pain meds to take home. So odds are she's probably dipping into those. It wasn't a major surgery. It was just something that had been nagging her for quite some time. And she finally decided, you know, I'm just going to get this taken care of. So now mom is home and doing well. And of course, the weekend. Wow. What a weekend. Hey, how are you doing? Before I tell you my stories, are you doing okay? You having a good day? Everything all right? Did your Monday go well? Well, good. I'm glad. It is it looks like a beautiful day in our neighborhood. Of course, the summertime is here. It doesn't seem to matter where you are. We have that summertime pattern going on now. Whichever part of the country you are in, you've got your own summertime pattern, and you know what that is. It's just, and here in the Southlands, it is high humidity, lots of muggy heat, and a thunderstorm every afternoon. And we need the rain, don't get me wrong, and it's a relief because it does cool things down quite a bit. But, wow, the humidity is just crazy. It's crazy, crazy, crazy. I'm talking crazy. But if you can duck indoors and stay in some air conditioning or escape it for a little while, you're doing okay. All righty. Well, the weekend was semi-eventful. We made a trip to visit family in Pensacola, and we made a stop. As I mentioned on Friday that I would be making a stop in Evergreen off of I-65 heading south and stopping at the Kaneka Sausage Company, where they actually have a little store. They have a massive, massive production facility there. And a distribution setup there where they've got semi-trailers parked everywhere waiting to be loaded and heading off to stores all over the place. And a relatively small shop, I thought. I would say the shop is probably under 1,000 square feet, and one wall of it is lined with coolers where you can buy cases. I'm talking cases of their delectable sausage. And by the way, if you're from another part of the country, for example, if you're from California or Hawaii or somewhere else, maybe Alaska, someplace in the far reaches from where I am, let me encourage you to get a friend who lives in the South to send you a package of Kaneka sausage. It'll change your life. I'm just saying. And I told you that what I wanted to do, since I had read that this company was now producing bacon as well, I wanted to pick some bacon up. And I did. They had two sizes available. There was a pound and a half size and the 5-pound size. I will not lie. I was tempted. But I did not buy the 5-pound size. I really wanted it, but the pound and a half, taxes and all, was around $7, and I think it was worth more than that because we pulled some of it out for Saturday at lunch. We actually just fried some up to include with what we had for lunch, and it was just amazing. The whole house smelled incredible. It was just absolutely fantastic. So they're not paying me to say this, so I'm just going to tell you on my own here. If you can find the Kaneka bacon, give it a shot. Odds are it will become your favorite breakfast food. It is just amazing. In fact, if I'd had some time this morning, I would have fried up a couple of slices for myself before I left for the studio. Alas, not enough time. Maybe dinner tonight we can have breakfast. Ooh, that would be really good. What else happened? Holy cow. Speaking of traveling on the interstate, my wife Jane and I were commenting about how much more interstate traffic there is today than there was even 5 years ago. It used to be that you could drive that stretch of interstate from Birmingham, Alabama to the Gulf Coast, or down to South Alabama before you get off and travel county and state highways. And it wasn't really all that crowded. Today, wow, it's just amazing. It's like rush hour. It's like rush hour. And this, I'm talking about just after lunch on a Friday afternoon and a Sunday afternoon, headed back just after lunch from the coast. And I understand to a degree the Friday afternoon, because it's the Friday before the 4th of July, and a lot of people were taking advantage of that holiday being sort of in the middle of the week and just taking the whole week off and going down to the coast for the week just to enjoy 4th of July week on the beach with their family. That happens every year, so I get the crowd going down. But the crowd going back was just as thick. And there were times we came to a complete stop on the interstate highway in the middle of nowhere just because traffic was doing that accordion thing, you know, the slinky thing, expanding and contracting. And when it would contract, it would stop. It was just amazing. So maybe it's time for us to expand our interstates and go another lane or two wider. I don't know, but it definitely was an interesting experience. What else is there? Not a whole lot else, except we did get lost in Pensacola at one point. My dad, who's in his mid-80s. My dad is in his mid-80s, and at one point he said, "Okay, turn left here." And after that turn, it was, I don't recognize this. We spent about 15, 20 minutes making turns that didn't get us in the right direction until I finally pulled out the phone and got directions to his house. So that was pretty much, aside from watching lots of episodes of MASH, that was our weekend. And then back to Birmingham to life as usual. Oh, man, such is life sometimes. All right, let's see. Just about 8 minutes into the podcast. Let me shift gears here and talk about a couple of things that I'd like to categorize as stupid but true. There was a man, not just any man. There was a man who got tired of complaining about the pothole that he had to encounter every day. He lives in Kansas City. Actually, it's hundreds of potholes he got fed up with. And this lack of urgency to do anything about the problem. So this man, Mr. Frank Sereno, decided the best way to solve the problem was to celebrate it. He threw a birthday party for a 3-month-old pothole on his street, complete with a slice of cake with a candle on the top. There's actually a photo in the article. It's a red, white, and blue slice of cake with a 3, you know, the little 3 birthday candle on top of it. On top of it. He told the CNN affiliate there. I didn't sing to him. I thought about it, but it was a little bit warm. So I said, yeah, well, we'll just do the cake. Sure enough, within days of posting a photo of his festivities to Facebook, the Public Works Department showed up and filled the hole. The hole is one of hundreds Sereno has reported to the city without a response. He says, "We have to be as creative as we can to get things fixed. For me, it was just about making sure my neighbors and my voice are continuously heard." He first reported this particular pothole, which runs about 3 inches deep and 2 feet wide, back in March. He's seen more and more potholes populate his neighborhood's roads over the past 20 years, and a particularly harsh winter cracked open hundreds more. The city public works department has started to patch the holes, a process slowed down by long bouts of spring rain, public works spokesman Maggie Green says. Hundreds of cases reported in 2019 remain open, according to their database. The Sereno's relatively young pothole was far from the worst he's seen. He's an avid motorcyclist, said he's driven past gaping pits in the asphalt that could cause him to fly off his bike if he hit him. But now that this particular hole's been filled, Sereno's scheming a new celebration, perhaps a graduation for the patched asphalt that's gone on to bigger and better things. He hopes he doesn't need to throw another pothole party. He says it's great that they came and fixed it, but my gosh, if this is what it takes to get potholes fixed, we'll never get anything done. Well, Mr. Sereno, welcome to city government. And if you'll check your city government, I think you'll probably find it's democratic. And they love to talk about solving problems, but they rarely actually do anything to solve problems. And that's life in America today. And that that is stupid, but true. Oh, my. And here's something else that I think is stupid, and it's true. Maybe you've seen this news story. It popped up late yesterday, and then this morning when I was checking sources, it was everywhere. Nike reportedly canceled a patriotic design for a shoe centered around Independence Day. It had a Betsy Ross flag on the back of the shoe, you know, with a circle of 13 stars for the original colonies. They canceled the shoe because one person objected to the symbol on the heel of the shoe. The Air Max USA shoe was scheduled to sell ahead of the 4th of July celebration. Who was this person who objected? Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick, we know him for originating the kneeling protest against the national anthem during NFL games. He reportedly told the company that the flag with 13 stars was a symbol for slavery that offended many. A spokeswoman for Nike said, Nike has chosen not to release the Air Max 1 Quick Strike 4th of July as it featured the old version of the American flag. You can see pictures of the shoe on social media. Just do a little search. If you get the show notes today, if you subscribe, you'll get that in your inbox in just a little while. The company asked retailers to return the shoes without telling them why. The retail price for the shoe? $140. $140. Before they pulled it from the shelves. Nike was criticized heavily on social media for signing the controversial former NFL quarterback for a multi-million dollar marketing campaign. Despite calls for a boycott of the athletic shoe company, Nike sales grew immediately after the campaign advertisement aired. That's according to some industry metrics. Hetal Pandya of Edison Trends said in September of 2018, there was speculation that Nike Kaepernick that campaign would lead to a drop in sales, but our data over the past week does not support that theory. Well, that's one report. And I think a lot of people just ignore this kind of silliness and just buy what they know they like. They don't participate in boycotts because stop and think about it. Sometimes I think it's warranted. Sometimes I think you should withhold spending your money for products and services by companies and people with whom you deeply disagree because you just don't want to fund their insanity anymore. That's up to you. I think that's your decision. And I think the problem I have with boycotts is that people join boycotts mindlessly. They don't actually think. They don't actually look for themselves. They don't actually do their own due diligence in order to find out why they're boycotting something or someone's product. They just join the gang. They jump on the train. They follow the crowd instead of doing their own due diligence and knowing why they should not spend their money with this particular person or company. And I think that's the big thing that bothers me about it. Boycotts are effective, but I disagree with the whole boycott mentality. Well, so-and-so said this is bad, so I'm not spending my money with them anymore. Did you look into it yourself? No, but I trust these people. I get that. I get that you trust these people. But why didn't you do your own research to dig in? Well, I read their articles and I read what they said about it. Really? Did you follow the links in their articles, or did they even have links to send you to deeper research on the material so you could actually see for yourself what was objectionable and why you should not spend your money there? Well, no, I trust them. So letting other people doing your thinking for you, quite honestly, is what's gotten our country into the trouble it's in right now. Each of us should be doing our due diligence instead of letting other people think for us. But a lot of people, hey, Nike fits me better than anything else, so I don't care if they're crazy. It's what works. I get that too. But if something bothers you enough, you really shouldn't spend your money with a company or person who does. But please, do it on your own, not just because you're a sheep. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. It's the Tuesday edition of the show on a kind of a wacky schedule week. As long as I've mentioned that, let's break it down, okay? And I don't mean the background music. It's the 4th of July week, Independence Week, so Thursday, no podcast. No podcast and no newsletter on Thursday. But I'll be back on Friday, so that puts a big hole in the week. So there's no yesterday, there's no Monday, and there's no Thursday. We get 3 days of production this week. Yeah. Maybe I should have been one of those people who went to the coast for the week. Wait, now that I think about it, that's not a bad idea. It's going to be a short week this week and next week as well. I'll be here Monday and Tuesday, but then Wednesday of next week will be the day of my knee surgery, and I won't be back at all after Tuesday next week until I know what the scheduling looks like for rehab and the like. And just as a quick heads up, I'm in surgery. I'm scheduled at 5 a.m. Wednesday morning. It's a week from tomorrow, 5 a.m. on the 10th. No more numbers, please. At 5 a.m. next Wednesday morning. And then, I'll be in, probably through the following Wednesday. If I'm seeing things right, I'll probably be in in-house rehab for at least 3 days afterwards. So this will be, well, I'm not really sure how it's going to work out, but I can see it being up through the following Wednesday, and then in outpatient rehab after that. And so I will not be able to do a show while I'm in the hospital. Gee, go figure. And folks down the hall are complaining, that guy's talking again, and he's talking to himself. I just can't. Why? Can you get that guy to shut up? So if I wanted to watch the news, I'd have it on this horrible cable here in the hospital. Tell that guy down the hall to shut up. But the because realistically speaking, I could fire up my iPad or my phone or something right there in the hospital bed at 8 a.m. Central and actually do a live show from the hospital. It'd probably get me kicked out, but I could. And I'm not sure you would want to listen to me carrying on about politics while on painkillers. Probably not a good thing. So let's not do that, okay? and then after that, it all kind of depends on how I can get things scheduled with outpatient rehab. And the folks at Therapy South are fantastic. I worked with them back in January, and I'm going back to them again after this. And if I can get afternoon appointments, then I can be here to do this in the mornings. My problem before was that I could only get what I could get, and they would throw me an afternoon bone every now and then, but usually it was in the mornings when they had openings, because people generally like to do afternoons. Me, I like to get things taken care of whenever I can, but they just didn't have the openings in the afternoons, so I wasn't able to have mornings free, which threw a big wrench in the works. But we'll see how that pans out, and I won't know until it happens. But I will keep you updated, because I'll stay on social media. I'll keep that going. So We got that going for us, all right? So just keep watching social media, and I'll give you updates. I'll probably be sharing and posting from the hospital as well. So I'll let you know. So there you have it. And that's what the next foreseeable future looks like. If I can be back soon, I'll be back soon. If not, I'll let you know what's happening. Okay? All right. One of the sources that I go to on a fairly regular basis for information to pass along to you is dailywire.com. And I usually don't have an issue with headlines with these guys because they tend not to be sensationalistic. And I do have a difference with a headline that I saw. I think this was this morning it popped up. And the headline is, in capital letters, "See it!" colon. And then it says, "Manhattan Chick-fil-A vandalized during Pride Parade." And I thought, wow, what did they do? Because when you see the words vandalizing and then parade, and you think of certain movements in our country, you immediately think the worst. You think broken windows, furniture smashed, you know, things like that. That's what, at least that's what comes to mind for me. Well, not so much. Let's dig into the story. The Chick-fil-A haters got another scalp on Sunday when they vandalized a Manhattan restaurant during the LGBT Pride Parade. In an exclusive report at the Daily Caller, photos revealed that the vandals had stretched pink duct tape across the Chick-fil-A restaurant window with the words "F haters" written across. The complete words, not just the initial. There was also a small sign reading "Love is a terrible thing to waste" that was propped against the door. And there is a photo in the article that shows the big X of pink tape and the sign. The report didn't specify if the restaurant will file a police complaint or if any suspects have been arrested. The location sustained, here we go, no property damage. As noted by The Blaze, the vandalism on Sunday was heralded by Pride Parade revelers publicly displaying their hatred of Chick-fil-A as they strolled past it. We've talked about this before. It's been 7 years. This is not normal or mentally healthy. The left-wing hatred for Chick-fil-A began in 2012 when company president and COO Dan Cathy expressed support for traditional marriage, prompting boycotts across the country from LGBTQ activists. Cathy said at the time, quote, "I think we're inviting God's judgment on our nation when we shake our fist at him and say, we know better than you as to what constitutes a marriage. I pray God's mercy on our generation that has such a prideful, arrogant attitude to think that we have the audacity to define what marriage is about. We are very much supportive of the family, the biblical definition of the family unit. We are a family-owned business, a family-led business, and we are married to our first wives. We give God thanks for that. We want to do anything we possibly can to strengthen families. We are very much committed to that. We intend to stay the course. We know that it might not be popular with everyone, but thank the Lord, we live in a country where we can share our values and operate on biblical principles." Now, this quote comes from the Biblical Recorder. Have you ever heard of this publication? No. Odds are you haven't. I would say that if you ask 10 people today, have you ever heard of a publication called the Biblical Recorder? I would dare say that probably 9 out of 10, or probably all 10 of those people would say, "The what?" Because it's just one of those things that most people have never heard of. I don't care if you're in church every time the doors are open. Odds are you've never heard of the Biblical Recorder. It's a small Christian publication. They have a website, thebiblicalrecorder.com. You go there and look at it. It's not a big operation. So that makes you wonder, doesn't it? It makes me wonder. How did this quote get out there? I think it's safe to assume Some angry leftist spotted it, probably shared by someone on social media, and they went insane. Well, just last year, two major publications wrote scathing articles begging people to boycott Chick-fil-A, The New Yorker and The Huffington Post. Quote, if you really love LGBTQ people, you just can't keep eating Chick-fil-A. That's what HuffPost writer Noah Michelson wrote. When Chick-fil-A wanted to set up shop in New York City, Dan Pippenring of The New Yorker called it a creepy infiltration of the city. Yeah, chicken sandwiches are a creepy infiltration. By the way, just as a side note, the Chick-fil-A in New York City basically has a constant line out the door. Yeah, it's really, really popular. Don't tell the liberals. Discrimination against Chick-fil-A has reached unprecedented levels in recent months, with universities and airports seeking to ban the fast food chain from doing business due to the founder's biblical worldview on human sexuality. In 2019 alone, the chain has been banned from two major airports, San Antonio and Buffalo, and several universities. Most recently, a dean at Rider University resigned from his post when the school banned the fast food restaurant on campus. To prevent further discrimination, the Texas House recently passed a Save Chick-fil-A bill to prevent the San Antonio airport and other venues in the state from banning the restaurant. As noted by the Daily Wire, however, the chicken giant just continues to thrive, becoming the third biggest fast food chain in the United States with $10.2 billion in sales. This boycott, this banning of Chick-fil-A, this protest of Chick-fil-A by the LGBTQ community, as I've said on several occasions now, is neither normal nor healthy. These people are so fixated on their hatred of someone who just sees life a different way. It's very, very revealing. These people who demand tolerance and acceptance are completely intolerant and unaccepting of others. And that is very typical of the left. Aha! Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Yeah, I shortened that break up a lot. Trying to make up for a little bit of lost time here. Ah, man, what a weird day this has been. Alrighty. By the way, a note to podcast subscribers. I'm going to cobble this thing together. We're just going to miss a couple of minutes of time. But there was just a computer meltdown. And I keep looking over my shoulder to my left at this other computer. Is it still on? I rebooted it. I just shut the whole thing down and restarted it and brought it back up again. And hopefully it will continue functioning until we can get finished with today's podcast. And this segment is going to be longer than our normal final segment because I threw a few commercials out just so that we could regroup some time. Or as Maxine Waters would say, reclaiming my time! So here we are. Let's dig into the issue I talked about before we dove into the break, and that is what percentage of the American population is actually a member of the LGBT community? In this article from PJ Media, written by Paula Bolliard, it hit yesterday, and when I read it, I thought, well, I've got to share this. So here we go. In 1989, Marshall Kirk and Hunter Mazden penned a book called After the Ball, How America Will Conquer Its Fear and Hatred of Gays in the 90s, wherein the authors outlined a strategy for transforming how Americans viewed homosexuality. They proposed to harness the power of the ad industry and media to depict gays, quote, in the least offensive fashion possible, end quote, while stigmatizing those who disagreed with the gay lifestyle. Kirk and Mazden were honest about their cynical scheme to manipulate the American public. Quote, we're talking about propaganda, end quote. They proposed a continuous flood of gay-related advertising while making, quote, homo-hating beliefs and actions look so nasty that average Americans will want to disassociate themselves from them, end quote. They go on to say, we have in mind a strategy as calculated and powerful as that which gays are accused of pursuing by their enemies. Or if you prefer, a plan as manipulative as that which our enemies themselves employ. It's time to learn from Madison Avenue to roll out the big guns. 2 decades later, no one would dispute that the campaign to normalize homosexuality has been wildly successful. So successful, in fact, that Americans vastly overestimate the number of gay Americans, believing there are 5 times as many as there actually are. A new Gallup poll reveals U.S. adults estimate that nearly 1 in 4 Americans are gay or lesbian. Gallup has previously found that Americans have greatly overestimated the U.S. gay population, recording similar average estimates of 24.6% in 2011 and 23.2% in 2015. In each of 3 polls in which Gallup has asked this question, a majority of Americans estimated this population to be 20% or greater. Americans' estimate of the population of gay people in the U.S. is more than 5 times Gallup's more encompassing 2017 estimate that 4.5% of Americans are LGBT, based on respondents' self-identification as being lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. Let me repeat this part. Americans' estimate of the population of gay people in the U.S. is more than 5 times Gallup's more encompassing 2017 estimate that 4.5% of Americans are LGBT. Gallup says the massively inflated estimations are owed to the group's outsized visibility. Citing an annual report by LGBT advocacy group GLAAD, Gallup explained that representation of LGBTQ people as television series regulars on broadcast primetime, scripted programming, reached an all-time high of 8.8% in the 2018-2019 television season, which is nearly twice Gallup's estimate of the actual population. One need only to watch HGTV's House Hunters for a few hours to understand just how gay mainstream television has become. It's not just television. The mainstream media slants their reporting on LGBT issues in favor of gay rights and goes out of their way to demonize religious conservatives who object to same-sex marriage. We just talked about that with Chick-fil-A. And let's not forget that this group, representing less than 5% of the population, gets an entire Pride Month to celebrate their lifestyle, with major corporations falling all over themselves to prove how woke they are, despite the fact that Americans are still deeply divided on these issues. They'd rather have their LGBTQ street cred than the dollars of average Americans who refuse to join the moral revolution. There's no escaping everything Pride during the month of June. LGBTQ affirmations are all over television, the news, and social media. The messaging is also being heavily directed at children in schools, public libraries, stores, and even some churches, glamorizing the gay lifestyle and heroizing its worshipers, its practitioners. It's no wonder Americans wildly overestimate the size of this minority population. Gallup's survey says that 4.5% of Americans are LGBT. This is according to their answers to the survey. Their answers. Previous figures I had seen came from the U.S. Census, which said that roughly 2 to 3% actually admitted being LGBT. So Gallup's survey says 4.5. Now, the reason I asked you before the break what percentage you would think is because most of us would think just from looking at television, just from looking at the movies, just from looking at media today, you would think that percentage was 10, 15, 20, possibly 25%, which is what Gallup found most people think. And that is all because of marketing. It's not reality, it's marketing. So the LGBT community has participated in deception. I would say not only are they deceiving themselves, they are deceiving everyone around them. And when you look at the attitude, you look at the reasoning, the rationale, we have in mind, if I can go back and quote a portion of the article, we have in mind a strategy as calculated and powerful as that which gays are accused of pursuing by their, who? Enemies. Or if you prefer, a plan as manipulative as that which our enemies themselves employ. Our enemies. So what we have here is a victim group, a segment of our society, which sees itself as victims and perpetrates the mythology of victimhood by relating stories to one another, warning each other, hey, if you come out, these people are going to disown you. And also inflating their numbers so that people believe there are more of them than there actually are. And anyone who doesn't see things the way they do, anyone who doesn't agree with them, accept them, and ultimately allow them to have anything and everything they want, is an enemy. As I said before about this 7-year-long crusade against Chick-fil-A, it is neither normal nor is it healthy. This seeing of those who disagree as enemies is not normal or healthy, but it is typical. So this is what we have to keep in mind when we're dealing with this community. There's another article in the Daily Signal. It's by Nicole Russell. And it's called LGBT Activists Could Be to Blame for Falling LGBT Acceptance. In a recent hit single, You Need to Calm Down, Taylor Swift mocks people who stand firm in their beliefs about sexuality, asking that they stop their bigotry and calm down. The music video, which went viral, depicts conservatives as ignorant hicks who reject gays and are driven by animus. They are ugly, dated, and lack basic hygiene. By contrast, the LGBT folks in the video are bright, happy, and boast perfectly coiffed hair. Moreover, the angry hicks are a dwindling minority, while the upbeat LGBT folks are shown to be ascendant, on the right side of history, you might say. Despite these crass portrayals, which only confirm the left's worst prejudices, a new survey released Monday suggests that young people are not actually falling in line with the LGBT movement, as the common narrative suggests. In fact, they're increasingly uncomfortable with it. According to the annual Accelerating Acceptance Report, conducted by the Harris Poll on behalf of LGBT advocacy group GLAAD, the number of Americans 18 to 34 who are comfortable with LGBT people in various situations slipped from 53% in 2017 down to 45% in 2018. And the 53% figure is down from 63% in 2016. The survey asked men and women of various age brackets whether they are uncomfortable with the following: learning a family member is LGBT, having your child placed in class with an LGBT teacher, learning your doctor is LGBT, learning your child had an LGBT history lesson in school. The largest drop in acceptance appears to be among the youngest age bracket. In 2018, 36% 8% of young people said they were uncomfortable learning a family member was LGBT, compared with 29% in 2017. Likewise, 34% were uncomfortable learning their doctor was LGBT versus only 27% a year earlier. In addition, 39% said they'd be uncomfortable learning their child had a school lesson on LGBT history versus 2 years prior. It appears young people have dropped the most in their comfortability with LGBT people. In 2017, 64% were comfortable, compared to 52% in 2018. There's more to the article. You should read the whole thing, and you can get it in today's show notes if you get the newsletter. What's happening is this push, this marketing effort, this ad campaign has gone too far. And the comfort level is dropping. Because no longer are we being asked to accept, we're being commanded to endorse. And that's a big difference. And that's it for today. God bless you. Have a great one. Hopefully we'll see you back here tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.